Senate will come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Monday, February 17th. Anderson, District 2.
Here.
Anderson, District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis, Hastert, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern, President Ross.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Pastor Minder.
Let's pray. Father, on this windy, windy Wyoming morning, we thank you for the freedoms we enjoy on this President's Day. I thank you for the men and women in this room that are representing us and asking you to give them wisdom and clarity and compromise and everything they need to do to get their job done to make our government more efficient, more effective for the citizens. Lord, we thank you for the men that have led our country over the years on this President's Day as we remember them. We pray for our President today that you protect him, his wife, and his daughters, that you would give him wisdom and the spirit of compromise and the ability to lead effectively and to protect our Constitution, the same as these men and women have committed to also. Thank you so much for your love for us and the promise that you have to guide us if we ask for it. We pray this in your Son's name. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading correction, approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 14th, 2014, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. All right. The doctor of the day is Dr. Larry Kirbin from Buffalo. The nurse of the day is Ann Davin from Cheyenne. Today in Wyoming history, 1870, Esther Morris appointed the first female justice of the peace. Thought for the day, a billion here, a billion there. Sooner or later, it adds up to real money. Senator Dirksen. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, it's a really great, rare privilege that we have here today because I want to introduce to you a real hero of mine. We're very fortunate to have up here in the upper gallery Spud Murphy and his son Mark.
Oh.
And Spud doesn't know I'm doing this. Spud fought in World War II. He flew Corsairs. He knew Boeington. He's a Marine pilot. He ran the Kendrick Ranches, and he's the father of Mark and Mary, now she's married to Waylon, that are my landlords. And I've gotten to know Spud over these years. He's one of the most extraordinary, modest person about his life and his service to this country. Can you imagine flying Corsairs in World War II with next to Boeington's group? So, Spud Murphy, an American hero.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Senate, Spud. It's good to see you. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, in accordance with Senate Rule 4-7, barring any objection, I would like to re-refer Senate File 117, Summary Probate Proceedings, sponsored by Senator Perkins, to Committee 6.
Without objection, Senate File 117 will be re-referred to Committee Number 6, Travel and Probate. Senator Coe.
Have privilege of the floor, please.
You may.
Up in the balcony, and if you haven't heard from him, you're going to, is the Code of Youth for Justice group that journeyed down here 400 miles to talk to all of you. And please welcome them. They're up here in the balcony. If you haven't heard from them, you will. Stand up. Stand up.
Welcome to the Senate. Okay. Any other privileges? I guess not. Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 1, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriation, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1st, 2014.
Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1B, Senate File 1 is referred directly to the Committee of the Whole. Bills on second reading. Senate File 3, second reading of the Senate file.
School Facilities Collaborative Committee Process.
Senate File 3, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 16, second reading of Senate file.
Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act.
Senate File 16, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 33, second reading of Senate file.
County Board of Equalization 2.
Senate File 33, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 42, second reading of the Senate file.
Electrical licensing, installation of light bulbs.
Senate File 42, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 45, second reading of the Senate file.
Game and Fish Department General Fund Budget Request.
Senate File 45, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 48, second reading of the Senate file.
Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership.
Senate File 48, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 56, second reading of the Senate file.
State Engineer Fees.
Senate File 56, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 57, second reading of the Senate file.
Reduction of Boards and Commissions.
We have an amendment. The clerk will read that Senate, second reading amendment number one in.
Senate File 57, second reading amendment number one, page one, line two.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move adoption of this amendment. What this amendment does, Mr. President, goes into this bill and removes the language relating to the Governor's Food Safety Council. And that's why you see it's all deleting. We're just removing this language from the bill so that they would stay intact. And, Mr. President, what happened was, while I was doing penance for my sins in Appropriations Committee and waiting for them to get to my bill, they heard this bill, and the official in the Department of Agriculture that actually uses this Food Safety Council came and testified. And the testimony, as best I can summarize it, is it doesn't meet every year, but when there's a major change to our food safety laws and they need new regulations, this council gets convened for the purpose of giving him advice on how do you write the regulations for whatever change we've made in our food safety. And that it's very useful because it brings in a number of different perspectives. And the state epidemiologist was there, who's a member of the council, and confirmed that that's in fact what goes on. That's a little different from a council that's not being used at all and is inactive. And it's, say, not convened every year. I think he said the last time was in 2012, because we don't need it every year. But when needed, the testimony was quite useful. So what this amendment does is remove that from the bill. If there's some people, members that have more knowledge of this area, I would certainly, Mr. President, welcome their debate. But I think it's a debate we ought to have, because this is a council that is, on occasion, active when it's needed.
Discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I urge your support of this amendment. My colleague from Natrona County makes a good point. And in the sands of time, it does meet sporadically. If it strengthens our food safety program, then, you know, let's give them a title. You know, better to be a council than just a bunch of people gathered up. We always like to have a good title. I urge your support of this amendment.
Further discussion? Questions being called on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment has been adopted. Senate File 57 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 58, second reading of the Senate File.
National Guard Service Governor's Authority.
Senate File 58, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, I request that Senate File 63 be laid back a day.
Without objection, Senate File 63 will be laid back for consideration on second reading tomorrow. Senate File 70, second reading of the Senate File.
State appropriation lapsing of funds.
Senate File 70, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 72, second reading of the Senate File.
Burglary.
Senate File 72, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 78, second reading of the Senate File.
Jason Flatt, Act 2.
Senate File 78, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 81, second reading of the Senate File.
Employer access to social media accounts.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 81.
Senate File 81, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 13 through 17.
Senator Nutty.
Mr. President, I move adoption of amendment number 1 to Senate File 81. Mr. President, I bring this because I like this bill so much. It's a wonderful bill, and I congratulate the senator from the western part of the state for bringing this to the Senate. The amendment deletes Section D on page 3. The first part of this bill is the wonderful part that protects potential employees and employees from revealing their social media accounts. The second part says, though, what employers may do to access their accounts. Particularly, Section D says that an employer can access social media on application for a position, meaning that is not the work-related computers, it isn't the work-related accounts, it's the very personal accounts, and it specifies this for just one type of employer, and that is law enforcement. I think that specifying one profession opens the entire bill up to any employer really utilizing this there or taking legal action against this bill. There are many other employers who have equally compelling reasons that they need to access employers' social media. Doctors, teachers, lawyers. There are many, many employers who again, their reasoning would be equally compelling for seeing the social media of a potential employee. By removing Section D, we actually preserve the rights that are given to the employee in the first section of the bill. So I urge adoption of this amendment, which would delete Section D.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, I'd urge you to defeat this amendment. This is already existing practice, and to take away this tool that has been in use now for quite some time, I think it is fairly serious. We do recognize that our law enforcement, our Wyoming law enforcement officials, are expected to hold to a higher standard. And not that other people don't, but in this case, we already go through or ask those future employees, and they submit to going through a polygraph. Incredibly invasive, a psychological examination. Again, the standards are very high, and this is just one more aspect out there to make sure that we get the best of the best and do the best we can in selecting the people that are going to be protecting your families and ensuring your security and having access to all kinds of very personal and confidential information. So I'd urge you to not pass this amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I too rise in opposition to this amendment. Law enforcement does have some special needs here, but I would also say to the Senate that this amendment illustrates the need for this bill before we get this established in a whole bunch of other areas too.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 81 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment has failed. Senate File 81 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 84, second reading of the Senate file.
Child support payments.
Senate File 84 have been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 85, second reading of the Senate file.
Trespassing to collect data.
Senate File 85 have been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be...
Mr. President.
Sorry. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd request that Senate File 85 be laid back for a day.
Without objection, Senate File 85 will be laid back for one more day. Senate File 103, second reading of the Senate file.
State buildings construction.
We have an amendment. Reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 103.
Senate File 103, second reading amendment number 1, page 17, line 12.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I've got it here, thanks. Thank you, Mr. President. I move the adoption of Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 103. Ladies and gentlemen, the staff was looking over the appropriations that we had set up for the committees. There's actually a select committee, and then there's the base, or there's two separate committees, and they'd forgotten to add in the additional appropriation for the second committee. This corrects that, so we have a total appropriation of $95,000 for two committees and not one. I urge your support of the amendment.
I think this calls for a roll call vote. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Hines,
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer, Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 103 has passed. Senate File 103, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Thank you, Mr. President. We do have a consent list. I move the following consent list for third reading. Senate File 14, Court Security Funding. Senate File 18, Counties Legal Publications. Senate File 19, Cities and Towns Legal Publications. Senate File 20, Local Governments Legal Publications. Senate File 41, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee. Senate File 51, Workers' Compensation Coverage. Senate File 54, Reports to the Legislature. Senate File 59, Specific service signage on highways, and Senate File 74, unemployment insurance coverage fiduciaries.
Would any member of the Senate like any of those bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 14, Senate File 18, Senate File 19, Senate File 20, Senate File 41, Senate File 51, Senate File 54, Senate File 59, and Senate File 74. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft. Dockstader, Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 14, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 14, 30 ayes. Senate File 18, are there any changes? Dockstader, aye to conflict. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 18, 29 ayes, 1 conflict. Senate File 19, are there any changes? Dockstader, aye to conflict. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 19, 29 ayes, 1 conflict. Senate File 20, are there any changes? Dockstader, aye to conflict. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 20, 29 ayes, 1 conflict. Senate File 41, are there any changes? Rothfuss, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Closing vote. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 41, 23 ayes, 7 noes. Senate File 51, are there any changes? Von Flederen, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 51, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 54, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 54, 30 ayes. Senate File 59, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 59, 30 ayes. Senate File 74, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 74, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 14, Court Security Funding, Senate File 18, Counties, Legal Publications, Senate File 19, Cities and Towns, Legal Publications, Senate File 20, Local Governments, Legal Publications, Senate File 41, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, Senate File 51, Workers' Compensation Coverage, Senate File 54, Reports to the Legislature, Senate File 59, Specific Service Signage on Highways, and Senate File 74, Unemployment Insurance Coverage, Fiduciaries have passed the Senate. Senate File 6, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 6, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Groundwater Contested Cases, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 6.
Senate File 6, third reading amendment number 1, delete the Meyer second reading amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, this amendment is as a result of the lengthy debate we had here on Friday on second reading on this bill, and afterwards, after adjournment, a number of us got together with the state engineer and state engineer's lawyer and to fully explore what we'd done here. I would say it's important to recognize that this is a very limited bill dealing with just control areas, because I think there's three of them in the state. It's a relatively small percentage of the state's land surface, but it's quite limited. And what the state engineer was trying to do with this bill is restrict the number of contested case hearings to one, and then you get an appeal to the Board of Control. And if you don't prevail there, you can go to the district court on the record. And there's a complete ability to bring evidence into the record in the first contested case hearing, which is for the state engineer. It's for the state board of control. Now, the state engineer is a member of the board of control, but since the first case hearing is before him, he's got to recuse himself from the second hearing. And the intent of the bill, as it came to us, was to allow a limited amount of additional testimony to come in if somebody persuades the Board of Control that they need this more relevant testimony. It's not in the record. That needs to be there so you have a good, strong record. And that's what the language in the bill does. It, we knocked out with the amendment on Friday the language that limits what comes into the where the Board of Control directs it, and they'll listen to the parties as to what they ought to direct. But by doing that, we've essentially made the Board of Control hearing another contested case hearing. So there's two of them. And that, I think, is a mistake. What the amendment does is reverses that, and then it changes a couple of words. It says it replaces or with and, so they'll consider both the case record from the original contested case hearing and any other evidence that they've asked to be brought in. And then it adds, if any, after that evidence, because it may well be that there will be no additional evidence that comes in. So you don't have to take more evidence in. It's very clear, but only if the Board of Control finds something. The procedure was copied from our hearings on contested cases in unemployment insurance. It's worked well there, has not led to duplicate contested case hearings, has strengthened the record. And that's what we're trying to do here. And this will bring the bill back to the intent that the state engineer had, which I think is one that makes a lot of sense because there's no point in having two contested case hearings. The second hearing for the Board of Control ought to be an appeal hearing, ought to serve that purpose. I think it's wise to have it for the Board of Control before you go to district court because they have shown plenty of independence. And they do have professional understanding of the issues involved, Mr. President. That's important. So this will restore the bill to its original intent and strengthen it. And there was considerable discussion on Friday that they were going to jimmy the appeal record by only letting in the evidence that favored their prejudices. I don't think that's accurate. They aren't excluding any evidence that's already come in. But it does let them consider something that might have been missed, Mr. President. So I'd urge the adoption of the amendment.
Would you please move the amendment?
I did, Mr. President.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. I did. Oh, well, if I didn't, I do.
Okay. Thank you. It's the I do amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Question's been called on the amendment. All those in favor of third reading amendment number one to Senate File 6, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. Question is now, shall Senate File 6, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case. Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geist,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Senate File 6, having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 6 has passed the Senate. Senate File 43, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 43, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, prioritization of municipal solid waste facility project, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment, third reading amendment number one, to Senate File 43. The reading clerk We'll read in the amendment.
Senate File 43, third reading amendment number 1, page 6, lines 6 and 7.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for the adoption of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 43 and ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, as I think where we're headed now on this landfill remediation is we're going to end up with two large lists as we move forward. You recall we began the process of understanding that particularly small communities had some areas where they were pits that were open that needed to be closed. They had former solid waste facilities that they're no longer using that need remediation. And we thought we had about a $180 million, $200 million obligation that existed out there, and the small towns, communities simply said, there's no way we'll ever be able to pay for that. So we embarked on the process of setting aside monies to go into the landfill remediation account to begin addressing these issues. But we said, before we spend a dollar of this, let's put the list together and figure out what it is we have to remediate so we know how we have a finite number of amount of obligation. We'll identify the dollars and we'll address them. Then along the way, as we're moving through, they said, well, you know, we've got some pits that are open now, some land use facilities that are open now, the smaller communities are using. They simply don't have the resources to stop using it and put a cap on them because the transfer stations are just outside their budgets. So we said, well, if we know we got a problem, let's go ahead and allow the smaller communities to jump ahead and provide or build a transfer station. We'll pay for that. We'll stop using the pits, and we'll close or put a cap on them. And then we'll come in and start doing the long-term remediation of pits that have already been concluded. Fair enough. So then the list is provided. And what this amendment does is pull off the last two, which are items 6 and 7, or Cheyenne and Casper at the final page on page 6. And, folks, those two communities, like many of our other communities, they have the resources to build in and address their issues. This program was never intended to go in and take care of problems for those communities that have the population base and can pass into their rate making the cost of addressing their closures and their permits. This is exactly why we wanted the list. And the list is not intended to proliferate to those entities that can afford themselves. So I urge you to support the amendment, strip those two items that appear to have been thrown on the last minute, just as large block numbers.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't think it surprises anybody that I would rise on this one. Points well taken, and I appreciate my friend from Albany County explaining the original intent, because that's the way I remembered it as well. But I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more from the committee with regard to why the two large cities were added to this list. And the fact is, we've got solid waste issues, whether you live in one of our small communities out there or whether you live in one of your large communities. And to say that just because we've got a population base that we can tax on our own, so let's just leave them off the list, that doesn't hold enough water for me at this point. I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more from the committee in this regard. Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And along that same line, you know, as I look, Mr. Chairman, on the amendment that would seek to strike on page 6, lines 6 and 7, there's a capital T out to the side of both of those, which I understand according to the bill, those are transfer projects, and I know, I believe that both the entities listed on line 6 and 7 would be stricken by the amendment. Both are recipient of transfer stations. I just confirmed with the good senator from the Glen Rock Carbon Commerce County area that indeed they've already closed that one and they're transferring down there. So, I mean, while I would agree to some extent if the committee would help us out with this, if these are for transfers, or to help absorb the transfers from other smaller utilities or other smaller landfills that are being closed, and those are for transfer facilities and deal with the transfer of now where you've made these two municipalities large recipients are basically regional facilities, and this is intended to deal with the problems related to transfers coming from outside those entities. I would like to hear that, too, before we make this vote.
Further discussion? Mr. Minority Floor Leader?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, my understanding is that the process for developing this list was to a large degree an opt-in process where a request was made for all operating waste disposal facilities to make estimates and potentially apply for the program to get on this list. I do not, to the best of my knowledge, believe that the intent is for receiving of transfer product. In other words, if you're the destination, there was no intent in this legislation to have funding available for you as a destination because, in fact, you'll be receiving fees, tipping fees, to receive that trash from the other entity and will, in fact, be paid to receive. I think there's good reason for these two to be at the bottom of the list in that they did, in their defense, have the foresight to volunteer themselves to get included on the list for consideration, which is, I think, in the defense of these people doing the right thing to make sure that they raise their hand. Yes, we would be willing to accept funding in the future. But to my knowledge, and I could certainly stand corrected, there is no plan at any point on the horizon, even in the distant future, to cease and transfer or develop a transfer facility in either of those two locations, which is why a relatively vague number was put there and why the priority is so much lower than the other programs. So my understanding is that neither of those numbers particularly needs to be in the legislation, but from my standpoint, even if they stay in the legislation, all of this is based on appropriation anyway, and we would have to appropriate dollars to projects to move further and further down the list. So as I see it, it's kind of a vote it up or vote it down from my standpoint. I'll be supporting it, but the reality is I don't see a project on the horizon. I don't think that there's any anticipated projects available for either of these two locations, thus the very low priority, Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would speak in favor of the amendment and ask the body to vote aye. There's a lot of unknowns, and to answer my one colleague's question about Natrona County, this is only for the city of Casper. It would not affect other areas, within the county. And Cheyenne, and there's a lot of unknowns there, and I understand from some of the testimony received, it's been several years ago, that most of the solid waste was being hauled down to Colorado, and so there's some issues there. I just think that, the senator from Albany County is right. This is two or three or four years down the road. This will have to be revisited. There's nothing in here that says there will be any money appropriated for these two. But there's certainly a lot of questions that need to be answered. So I think it's better to go ahead and take them off, let them come back and make their case so we really understand what they're up to.
Mayor Scott.
Mr. President, I think the instinctive reaction that many of us have that represent these communities is that there's an unfairness in the treatment and that our citizens are going to have to pay more for their solid waste because the rest of the state ganged up and excluded them. Am I right in understanding, though, that the real situation is that this is for material coming in from outside and that maybe the remedy is simply we increase the tipping fees to cover all the costs so it really comes back and does fall on the rest of the state for whom we're taking this solid waste, which is a different proposition. That's not a discrimination against our citizens. And my question in part, is there any restraint on how much we charge for these tipping fees that would prevent us from recovering the full cost from the other communities that would be using them?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, speaking on and for the amendment, this is a slippery slope. There was a comment made that these were voluntary opt-ins. If you go through this whole list of closures, I would tell you that almost every one of those, not voluntary, it's through the regulatory environment that's been placed on all of these facilities, either through EPA or our own Department of Environmental Qualities, has made it so cost prohibitive for these small dumps to stay open that they didn't opt in. They were regulatory forced into this program. And I think the tall senator next to me is correct. These facilities need to stand on their own as transfer facilities, because if we don't go down that road, we forced them into this situation. You will be perpetually faced with an appropriation to now subsidize these. So speaking on and for the amendment, this doesn't add anything to the tax burden of those locals' dumps. Any of that refuse coming into those dumps should be paid by the facility that's transferring those in there. So,
Mayor Burns, did you wish to speak?
Yes, Mr. President. Mr. President, it was my understanding going in the interim on this bill that it was for small communities and so forth. I've got to admire the language of the minority floor leader, because the city I represent to the north, which is also Class 1 city, I think would voluntarily opt into receiving $9 million, too, given the opportunity.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Speaking neither for nor against the amendment, since a portion of my district came in at conversation, the solid waste district that I live in, I live 11 miles from town, so we can either hire a service to come pick up our trash or we haul it in. I choose to haul mine in. But from that distance or from that location, then it's transferred to Casper, and we pay a depository fee per ton. Now, the advantage to a small district like Glen Rock with this one solid waste district on the west side of the county, the advantage to that, number one, is that it costs us a lot less, given the economy of scale, to deposit our solid waste in that larger facility than it would be to operate our own. So with that, we were perfectly content to bond issue to tax ourselves in order to form a solid waste district. That tax has then put in place a transfer facility. Then that is transferred to Casper, and we pay for that service, for the depositing that, and everything has worked well. I think perhaps there's been a minimum of subsidy from the state. The small community was willing to do that on their own, and I think that they will cover most of their own closure costs, although the so-called dump is not completely closed, even though we have a transfer facility in place. So just FYI.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Just a kind of a few words on the process on this bill. As you well know, the Minerals Committee was tasked with coming up with this priority list for these landfills that had need for funding, and as explained in the bill how this process works. But also, having said that, we did come up with a priority list, as you can see here in the bill. But the fact of the matter is, there's only a small amount of funds that are available at this time. This list represents a huge amount of money. There's only about, I think, $5.5 million. I think there's $4 million plus $1.5 million that's even available to do this work right now. And as you can see, the request went out for those communities, whether they were large or small. Basically, we concentrated more on the small communities, but there was some need by the larger ones, of course. But the fact of the matter is, because of the amount of dollars available, these two large communities that are listed here on line 6 and 7 on page 6 are way, way down the list. It may be years and years before that those funds may even be available. All take place, these smaller landfills that are way ahead of that. Just an explanation of the process, not necessarily speaking on the amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. President, the list you see is really a request of the Appropriations Committee, honestly. They wanted to know, if we're going to start appropriating money for these projects, what exactly is out there. That's why you see the priority list. And that's why we list all of them. The good senator from Southwest Wyoming is exactly correct. This is way down the road before we can fund all these different projects. Probably why you see the two big communities at the bottom of the list, because that's the most money. And so this was just a request, my understanding, from the Appropriations Committee, wanted to see what the problem was and how much it was out there.
Senator Landon, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a quick comment with regard to my friend from the Northwest, and he's absolutely right. And in my opinion, all the more reason to keep him on the list. This represents, you know, over a quarter of our population here. And the fact is, we don't have to vote for any appropriation. But I think it's useful for us to know, especially on these facilities that are going to be accepting all of this transfer, that we're going to have issues there too. And the fact is, having the foresight to recognize and let us know that, yeah, we're going to have this expense. As my friend from downriver pointed out, it's passed through. I mean, at some point, we're going to have this issue. And we can always push it to the bottom of the list, but I don't see any reason why we wouldn't want to have the complete list that the Northwest Senator talked about. Just so that we're reminding ourselves, we've got a lot of liability out there. We've got to deal with it all, whether you live in a great big community or whether you live in one of the little ones.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Mr. President, I'm going to begin by giving a little frustration towards the Oversight Committee on what they set out for their task. Remember, we were called upon to look at a number of facilities that were no longer in use, or, as was pointed out by the colleague from Savory, that we knew that regulations had been imposed in a way that was going to force closures or alteration of the cost to use existing landfills, and that those costs being imposed by either the DEQ or the EPA were so large that small communities could never pay for them even if they chose to. We set about the task to resolve those issues to say, look, they have to be addressed. But we asked the Minerals Committee to go back and really examine, do we have to do these high-cost closures? Can we do it less expensive? And along the way, they said, so we said, okay, we'll identify those closed facilities that for communities who cannot pay the actual cost to remediate. And that was about $180 million. Maybe it slid up to $200 million. And we said, okay, let's start putting away in an account to pay for those. But we said, let's go identify them first so we know what the finite issue is so that we just don't have this creeping and crawling of our budget. Then the committee apparently says, well, the community said, well, you know what? We'd like to build a transfer station and start moving it out and cap our existing facility. And it's the sooner we stop using it, the less the cost of remediation would be better or later. And we said, fair enough, that makes sense. If you're in that $180 million group that we've identified, then if you want to get started and going early, and if you can't afford that transfer station on your population, fair enough. So the charge of the Minerals Committee was to go find out what the cost of those transfer stations are, see whether it's fair to tax those folks. If they can tax for themselves, they should be. This is not a subsidy for them to have lower rates. And now we hear they said, well, anybody that wants to join in this group, put their hand up. Folks, I'm living in a community that's building a transfer station. They're also closing cells every year. They have to line their pits, and those are built in our rates, and they're expensive. Had anybody called and said, geez, do you want some free money? I can guarantee you we'll be there. A for Albany, we want to be the first one on the list. And, Mr. President, that's not what this list was for. And so the committee, what you were charged to do was to identify those areas for transfers and cease that are within the $180 million and limit it to those groups. And frankly, if you find that there are other communities here that could pay for their own, that this is an appropriate cost, or there ought to be cost sharing, you should be looking into that to insist and demand on cost sharing to the extent that their rates are not subsidized. What we do know is those two last communities certainly do not belong on that list. They were never part of the original $180 million. They may have to have transfer stations just like the large communities around the state. And if we're going to say, look, let's pay for everybody's so nobody has to charge sewer and water rates, and or actually this would be on our, your landfill rates, then let's put everybody in and we'll just get in the business of paying for everybody's landfill fills. But that's not what we're doing. There may be more that shouldn't be on here, but that's the job of the committee to select this down. The list are things that we accept as a state responsibility because those folks are already paying a rate equivalent to what's being paid in large communities, and they can't further tax themselves or reasonably afford to pay these costs. I urge you to support the amendment.
Question's been called on the amendment. All those in favor of third reading amendment number one to Senate File 43, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand.
Yeah.
Those opposed? Amendments passed. Further discussion on the bill? Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I wanted to address some of the concerns raised by the Majority Floor Leader. This is not the guiding legislation. The guiding legislation for both the cease and transfer project system and for the remediation system came in the previous legislature. And what it did was provide for the cost sharing, provide for the process, require applications through the SLIB, require assessments through the SLIB, and require a prioritization. This legislation comes simply because in our last session we had a request for an explicit list that laid out the order and priority, and I believe it was by the Majority Floor Leader that that request for the list came. There was nothing about drawing a line on the list, and in fact our experience with school facilities has been you have a full list, and then you decide what you want to appropriate based on testimony and need, feedback from SLIB, time passes, things change, we reassess, we reevaluate, and it's a living document. So the request for and the attainment of this particular piece of legislation is to meet that need. We can draw a line. There's no problem with that, and we just did. We cut 2 points off that line, but again, it was simply a full list, and I was pretty ambivalent on the particular amendment because it's not going to change the outcome, at least not for 40 or 50 years anyway, long after we're done with this problem. What we recognize is that we do have needs in terms of solid waste throughout the state. We have some approaches, and we recognize and heard plenty of testimony that some areas are capable of absorbing it through tipping fees and other fees, and some aren't. And so we put in place a process to allow SLIB to assess that. We also put in place, Mr. President, a lot of requirements that basically say that any community requesting a grant has to prove that from that point forward, they will be thoughtful of cost and will bear the full costs of that. So that requires the tipping fees. It requires that when you transfer to another facility, the facility in Natrona County or the facility in Laramie County is going to have to account for the full cost of disposal of that waste. And as time passes and as the system evolves, it should be a true cost of accounting that goes into effect because that's what we put into statute under the previous legislation. It's true. It's not in this legislation. It never was intended to. This is simply a list that was requested. We provided that list, and there was some good analysis that went into the ordering of that list. If the Majority Floor Leader wants us to draw a line, we can go back and ask where that line should be drawn and try and affect that change in the future. But right now, we know the level of appropriation. We know there's some priorities that need to get done, and we have a process in place that allows us to evaluate and further prioritize based on need through the SLIB.
Further discussion. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the process that we're going through, if the issue was to identify every landfill in the state and the cost of either capping, transferring, continuing the use, we could have done that. That was not the exercise. The exercise here is to focus on, as you recall, the issue began with DEQ and or such a DEQ saying that they were imposing federal requirements on these landfills that were imposing costs that small communities could no longer pay, and that the closure costs then had become so exorbitant that they couldn't even afford to close their permits, their cells. They couldn't line them. They've got, in some instances, there was some evidence of contamination. In others, there was no evidence. So the task was to begin paring down those that the state should pick up the obligation for. That's the bottom line. And that task is a narrowing task that says, how do we narrow our responsibility? Communities are expected to pay their costs. They have mechanisms to raise funds to pay their ongoing costs. If you're saying, look, let's just identify everybody's landfill costs, every community will put their hand up and we'll might as well just go out and survey everybody and put everybody on the list, and we'll have a list for every city and town in the state. And that's not the task. The task is to narrow it down to focus on those that cannot afford it and have these federal and state requirements imposed on them that they can no longer pay reasonably based upon their population loads. And that is the task. That's what we should push into. And to throw on two communities as though they belong in this list, they don't belong in that list anymore. And if any more than Laramie belongs in the list, or Sheridan. And those large communities should be on there. It is a paring and a narrowing. This is being put into statute for a purpose. And it ought to be narrowing.
Mr. Vice President.
Just one other thing, too. This is some great discussion, and when we get further into the budget bill, we'll talk about some of the things we're doing. But if you recall, it's been 4 or 5 years ago where we recognized we had an issue with solid waste in our state. And at that point in time, there was a thick report presented to the Minerals Committee that showed all of what we called either the orphan sites or problem sites. And that amount of money originally was estimated at $250 million. And that's how this started. And we said, how can we deal with this? And the Minerals Committee came up with some bills 3 years ago to start that process to dealing with these orphan sites and other sites that need to be taken care of. And a lot of them were by smaller communities that had no money. And as we got further into it, and we had that first bill, Majority Floor Leader and myself and other in this body started setting aside money into this remediation account to take care of these type of landfills, and that money now sits, that account now sits at $45 million. A couple of years ago, we started looking at some existing landfills that were in a position where if we went in there now and took care of those with the money now, we would save more money in the long term rather than wait till they would continue to cause damage, environmental damage, and some of the things. And this could be a landfill that was close to a stream and had no cap on it, and it was leaking, and, of course, when it leaks, when it rains, it leaks, it goes into the aquifer. So when we finally reclaimed that, the cost would go up. And so we developed the two accounts, the cease and transfer account that this bill refers to. We still have the remediation account. There's a bill in the House, I believe, that the Mineral Committee has sponsored that deals with that. And that's kind of how where we are, why we are today. And you recall the debate we had last year when that particular bill on cease and transfer came to the Corporations Committee, the Appropriations Committee, we added funding to that because we saw the need to get started right away. A lot of debate on this floor, a lot of unknowns, and that's why we asked the Minerals Committee to come back and prioritize. So I think everything's moving the way we want to do in terms of the overall picture. It's a big issue, and I think the state is making some good progress in how we move forward.
Question is, shall Senate File 43 pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe? Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Senate File 43, having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 43 has passed the Senate. Senator Hicks.
Could I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the body, I'd like you to give me a warm welcome to Mr. Wiggum and the 12th grade class from Hannah Elk Mountain School. If you would stand, please.
Welcome to the Senate. Senator Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
We have some absolutely wonderful Sweetwater County educators down here, I think getting educated, and I would really like you to give them a warm welcome. We have from the Sweetwater Education Association, Kathy Sizemore, Mark Cholot, Rob Wilmetti, and the Southwest Wyoming Uniserv Director for the Wyoming Education Association, Carol Jellicoe. Would you please welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome to the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President. Mr. President, just a heads up on the week. This is the week that we're going to work on the budget. The process for the budget and the amendments are generally found in your joint rules. And if you're looking at your joint yellow rules, you're going to find the process generally lined out on page 73 of the yellow booklet. In general, you'll recall that we'll go into committee the whole on the budget today. We'll work about half the budget today and the second half of the budget tomorrow. The only amendments that will be in order will be corrective amendments where the committee itself may, if it chooses to, offer amendments that would just make corrections to what they intended, essentially errors that the staff found in preparing the bill. Your first set of amendments will be available or will be on second reading, which will be on Wednesday. You need to have all of Wednesday. So you have to have all your amendments in by Tuesday at 5 for second reading amendment. Thursday is an off day, but you have to have all your amendments in by Thursday afternoon at 5 for third reading on Friday. So your deadline for your work is 5 o'clock tomorrow for your first round. 5 o'clock Thursday for your second round. There is an opportunity for JAC to put budget amendment type balancing amendments in on after the 5 o'clock, and those are generally to balance, or if they see that we have over-appropriated and they need to take some action to lower the appropriation. It's not carte blanche. We rely on them to use their own discretion. So that's the budget. We'll be First, we'll be going into that. We'll come out after we'll do the committee of the whole on the budget separately. Then we will come out and we'll do, before I go into that, the majority party will have a caucus at 2. That's about the only time that we can do it. We want to talk about some issues with respect to some big bills that are coming through. I'd love to have that caucus at another time, but our committees are working hard. They've already scheduled time. There's really no opportunity to have the caucus morning, afternoon, or night because the committees are working there. So we'll come back at 2 today. The majority party will go up in caucus. We'll come back and go right to work. The minority party is free to caucus. In fact, they can have the whole room if you'd like while we're gone. You've already seen we've got the budget. We need to get through half of it, at least half of it. Then we need to go on to committee of the whole. If you look at all the bills that are in committee, we've got about, I want to say about 38. If you knock off 10%, you're about 35. And we got about 15 bills on committee of the whole. So we need to be doing about 10 bills a day to finish up by Friday. So you get the picture. We're going to work half the budget, and we're going to work at least 10 bills. And if they're quicker, we'll work a few more, anticipating that we're going to need the time later. That gives you a feel, I think, for what the week's going to look like. Get ready to work.
Senator Coe.
Just a question, because this is a little different than what I understood initially. I understood that we would do committee the whole Monday and Tuesday, and that we would take Wednesday off, and then second reading on Thursday, and with amendments, and then third and final passage on Friday. Did I misunderstand that?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
You did misunderstand them. We do second reading on Wednesday. Thursday is your day off. You can get your last amendment. So you got a whole day to get your last amendments. Now, Mr. Chairman, do you have an understanding different than mine? So it's just the gentleman from Cody that's messed up. Anybody else messed up? One guy messed up. No problem. We love you anyway.
Mr. President?
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, we can have our colleague from Cody come down here by himself and do what he wants to do on Thursday for second reading or third reading.
We love you, man.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, having briefed us, we are now at that stage in the day for consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself in a committee of the whole to consider only budget bill set by.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Christensen.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Reading clerk will read the Senate file. Do you have it?
Senate File 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriation, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1st, 2014.
Senate Joint Appropriations Chairman Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things, members of the Senate, before we get started. First of all, you all have your budget bill. Okay? You're going to be working off that. You all also have your cheat sheet. Everybody has your, we call our cheat sheet. It's an 8.5 by 14 legal size document. You can get that. What we'll do, the motion, Mr. Chairman, will be for like agency one. I will move that agency, then I will discuss the agency, I'll answer any questions, and then we'll take a vote on that agency. What your Senate Appropriations Committee has done is divided up the budget between your five members. And I have that for the chief that will show who does what, and we'll each pick our own individual agency. We'll move that agency, we'll explain, teach you, ask questions, and we'll call for a vote on that. We also have available in Judy's office a complete list of the budget bill. So if any of you want to get into a specific agency, their entire budget, she has that in there. You're welcome certainly to go in there and grab it. She'll sign out and utilize it and take it back in case somebody else wants to see it.
Before we start, Mr. Chairman, I want to, you got your golden rod for today. Would you grab that, please? Excuse me. There's not a lot of difference between today and last Friday. Three bills passed last Friday, or were introduced that are, and passed that are involved in budgets. One is Senate File 70. We added the position in the State Auditor's Office. Senate File 48, $3,000. The Culture Trust Board and House Bill 70, which was $15,000, and it deals with State Parks Peace Officers benefits. The key to look at on the golden rod you got today is on the page one, you look down to the bottom right-hand side, about the middle of the page, we're $2.3 million in the red. Mr. Chairman, just a kind of an overview of some of the things in the budget before we get into it, a view from 30,000 feet, if you will. The total revenues available, and this is on your golden rod, for this biennial budget is $3.6 billion. I'm going to round these numbers off, but it's $3.65 billion. Out of that, we have to take out the 5% statutory reserve, which is about $104 million. That goes up every year as our budget goes up, which makes available $3.544 billion for spending for this budget for 15-16, this two-year cycle. If you look back at 13 and 14, the revenues we had back then were higher. They were roughly $3.73 billion. You take out the 5% statutory reserve of $100 million then, it was 99 and some change, leaves you $3.626 billion. The main reason our revenues were up in 13-14 compared to 15-16 is capital gains. You'll all remember when we had our general session last year, we had a supplemental budget that went in and had approximately 6.2% cuts to the agencies, and that was about a $62 million cut. That was for 1 year. We asked the agencies to biannualize that. They didn't. Only four did: University of Wyoming, Community Colleges, the Department of Health, and WIDOT. They were the only ones that biannualized that. The budget from 13-14 ended up being about $3.3 billion. And the reason I bring that up is when you look at the governor's rec for this biennial budget, it's about $3.3 billion. So they're essentially the same. One of the things that I mentioned earlier, and when you look at the golden rod, you can see on there what we call on the front page, there's the effective immediately provisions, and it's a third line down under expenditures. And what we've done, The governor had $38 million in that category, effective immediately. The GAC reduced that to $23 million. Mr. Chairman, what that does, that's utilizing money that was in. When we left the general session last year, we had about $50 million to roll forward into this biennial budget. And if it didn't roll forward and didn't spend it, then as of June 30th, that would go into the LSRA. Mr. Chairman, the governor took $38 million of that, so we're using money that would have rolled forward for his budget this year. The GAC reduced it to $23. That difference in either one of those, and certainly the GAC recs, that difference between that and the $53 million rolls forward into the LSRA. I wanted you to be sure and understand that. We have just some highlights, Mr. Chairman, and we'll get to these individually as we go through it, but just some highlights for your information. One of the things that we had was the SIPA account that we set up, $90 million. And in that SIPA account, we had some money for the streamlining of state rules. We had $60 million. This is the governor's recs to deal with our state institutions like the WLRC, the state hospital, the Pioneer Home in Buffalo, the one in Basin. And we had $90 million in the SIPA account. The governor did. We essentially took $60 million out of that SIPA and put it into other accounts and left only $30 million in the SIPA account. If you go through the major items, we have the state major maintenance component, which is general fund money of about $24 million. We have the salary increase component that the governor put in there that was $50 million, and we'll explain that more later in terms of salaries. And one thing, and I'll explain some issues I have there, just some numbers for you to think about.
Then we talked about landfills, and we had $15 million in the governor's budget. GAC did the same thing, and we'll get into that later. But what we did was, instead of putting that in the remediation account, we just had this discussion about it. We put that in the cease and transfer account because that was where we thought the need was. Moving further along, some of the major items were the Wildlife Natural Trust Fund. The governor had $15 million. He wanted $10 million in projects, $5 million into the permanent fund. The JAC took $5 million away from that. We put that into a game and fish fund for fish hatcheries. It's an inviolate fund. We gave $5 million to the general fund for projects, $5 million to the corpus. Other major items we went on down to is the community college capital construction. And here is a significant difference between the governor's recs and what the JAC did. The governor's recs had $30 million. The JAC added the additional building for LCCC. That was approximately $15 million. We authorized Casper to go ahead and do their horse arena. They had a really good deal up there, no state funds. We authorized three other projects for community college and allocated some money to that. The other major items, we went to the UW Tier 1 Engineering High Bay and Endowed Chair. The governor's rec's $20.5 million. We concurred with that. The courthouse security, the bill that just passed here today unanimously, had a $10 million general fund appropriation. The JAC played with that. I don't like what we did, but anyway, it prevailed. We took $3 million out of general fund and $3 million out of the federal mineral royalty grant program that the SLIB board administered to our communities. And those are the major differences. The one other thing I would point out, Mr. Chairman, that when the JAC got the budget, there was approximately $209 million in there. We allocated specifically $173 million of that and left $27 million on the floor for this body to utilize and spend how you wanted to. And where we put that money, and I'll go through that, and we'll continue to discuss it, $3 million of that went back to Water Development Account 1 to replace money we took out of there with the 10% cuts. $38.6 million went back to Water Development 3, where we took part of the money out of there for 10% cuts. And we also took part of the money out of there for the Gillette Madison project. And while I mentioned the Gillette Madison project, there's an appropriation in here for SIPA account and AML. This will complete the Gillette Madison water well projects for the town of Gillette. I mentioned the $5 million to the fish hatchery, the permanent fund. This is where we put $70 million into what we call the school foundation reserve account, plus $30 million from the SIP account, so there's $100 million in that account. The feeling there was that when you look at the revenue streams further out for the school foundation program, they tip over with some assumptions and go into the red. We thought that was appropriate to do. Instead of having $60 million for the state buildings for the WLRC and others, we put $30 million over into the, we transferred over that state auditor's office. A big one, Mr. Chairman, is a fireman A pension fund. You can see $19.1 million there. That bill is in the House. It's working its way through. And we set aside some money there to be utilized in the state auditor's office. And the last one that we have on that list of $173 million, Mr. Chairman, is $37.5 million for Senate File 103. Senate File 103 is a capital restoration project. And with that, I would be glad to answer any general questions. Otherwise, Mr. Chairman, we'll get into the budget. Any questions?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the Vice President going through, and I don't want to bog anything down at this point. Maybe it's more appropriate when the time comes, but I'd like to know a little bit more about that Fireman A account and the COLAs, and that's an issue back home. Now, I just don't have my arms around that yet, and how that relates to what we're doing with other retirement accounts that don't have COLAs, and maybe that comes up later in the budget, but thank you.
Chairman Bebop.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think since you asked a question, we could sure just talk about it briefly. What that bill does, and if you recall, that was a fund that was closed out many years ago, and I believe there are 300 individuals in the fund, and at one point in time, they were very actuarially sound to the tune of 130, 140%, so they were very generous in what they passed out to the recipients, and things changed, and there were some commitments made, and you can argue who made the commitment about a certain automatic COLA, if you will, or a 5% increase. And this legislature came back in mid-2000 and said we shall give them a 3% compounded COLA. And so every year they take whatever they're receiving, and then that's compounded 3%. So they get a 3% automatic COLA. And right now, as my understanding is, that's the only COLA that anyone gets in the state. What we did is we looked at the actuarial soundness of that plan, and if you continue with a 3% compounded COLA, the shortfall they had, they would be in the red around $67 million. So if you, in fact, eliminated the COLA, no COLA at all, the state would have to pick up $14 million to make it actuarially sound. So there's a bill in the House, and it kind of splits it three ways, if you will. It says that, well, they've agreed to go to a 2.1% COLA, automatic COLA, but not compounded. We set aside that the money that we need to do there is about $32 million, I believe, to fund it at that level. And we said there are originally five or six cities that these firemen work for. We said, you shall pay the lion's share of that, and the state picks up the different obligation. So it's a huge number. There's all kinds of, we've had a lot of discussion with our staff, our legal representation about our obligation. And what we need to do as a state, the best I can tell you, and we'll talk about it more, is that we really do not have an obligation to fund it. If, in fact, it should, if we do nothing and they continue to do the COLA and compound it, they run out of money, they'll sue, obviously, but we don't think we have an obligation. Maybe Mr. Majority Floor knows a lot more about it than I do, and he can get in.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the issue with respect to Fireman A is an intriguing discussion that will take some time for all of us to get our arms around it, as you've described. First of all, the state is not obliged or the liable person on retirement plans. Retirement plans belong to the employees. There's an employee-driven retirement commission that makes the financial decisions. The state does pay its share of contributions for all plans. And furthermore, with respect to the Fireman A, that account was, there were no state employees in it. They were all county, city, towns, or county employees. I think almost all city employees. So you have a group of community cities. So that if it was underfunded, it was underfunded by cities. In a sense, you can jump back into the landfill issue, and that is, how did we arrive? But cities did not pay enough in, and they stopped making contributions when the plan closed, and perhaps they should have made more. That's a discussion that's going to take place. In addition, it was a very generous plan in the sense that members were, everybody that was in the plan, every year would get their benefits increased to that was equivalent to a Fireman A first class. So that if you retired 20 years ago, you were getting a retirement on that particular year based upon the current salaries of a first class or whatever the category is of employee that was currently serving. When the plan was closed, that feature was taken out, but there was a COLA put in, a mandatory COLA that's driving the ground or the plan underground. If the state takes no action, the city takes no action, there are those of us that believe that the retirement fund runs out of money, it runs out of money. They have every capacity to ration their dollars in order to make sure there's enough dollars at the end. In your call, we went through all the other plans. We made sure that employees understand that these are your plans, and if you're awarding yourselves COLAs when it's not actuarially sound, that's your problem. It's not the state's obligation to backfill retirement accounts to pay for cost of living increases that are not actuarially calculated in the accounts. So Appropriations Committee did put an appropriation in this bill, in the budget bill, and I having sat on appropriations, I know why they do it. They want to have an amount profiled on the goldenrod. Fair enough. But when we get to that item, what I would suggest to you is that this is an item that belongs in the bill. The bill's coming through, and that's where this ought to be debated. The budget bill is not the appropriate place to debate the policy behind Fireman A and subsidizing accounts through the budget. It's far too complicated. I'm not critical of the fact that they want to profile that amount, but when we get there, I would submit that the appropriate thing to do is to remove the appropriation from the budget bill. And then when the bill comes through, you get to consider what amount should be put into either that account or a mirror account. There's always a debate whether if we're going to subsidize an account, whether we subsidize by adding to that account so that at the end of the day, if there's excess proceeds, we cannot recover it, or whether we create a second account that says you can reach in and dip into that account if needed, but only if you do certain things. And one of those things may be you forego cost of living increases. The state of Wyoming is happy to stand up and share in that responsibility, but not if it's an overly generous plan. And so that's a debate that belongs with the bill, where you get to debate the merits of the solution along with the amount of proceeds or the amount of money that we're going to ask the state of Wyoming to subsidize that account for. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, two general questions, although they will have some focus in the health area. One is, I'm hearing increasing complaint, Mr. Chairman, that there isn't effective restraint on the executive branch moving money around from one account to the next after we leave, that whereas they can't spend more in total than we appropriate, they change it around an awful lot after we depart, not only through the B-11 process, but apparently there's some other processes that are available to them, and we see quite a bit of change after we leave. And I want to inquire about that and about the flexibilities, and say the place I've heard the complaint, which I don't, I've heard the complaint specifically in the health area, that there's been a lot of movement from other items just sweeping up into the bottomless pit that is Medicaid. And so that is one concern I have. What can they do formally in the terms of this budget? And what do they do informally, because there's no real sanction on switching monies around in the budget? I would like some discussion on that generally. And, Mr. Chairman, while I'm on my feet, my second question is in the area of contingencies, and particularly contingencies the governor might have access to. And my fear, Mr. Chairman, is that we are having a particular set of risks in the health area in particular, that with the cutbacks we have made in previous years in the Medicaid program, with the cutbacks that we think are coming in Medicare and in private insurance through the exchanges as they try to keep some kind of control under health care spending generally nationally, they're the instinct of CMS, the federal agency involved, has been to just cut back provider reimbursements. And in the and that affects hospitals, nursing homes in particular. Both those do. And then with the cutbacks we've made otherwise, with the change we're making, in the developmental disability area, we're having some risks there. And in all three of those areas, I'm concerned we're going to be faced suddenly with institutions we can't afford to lose if we're going to get people decent health service being forced to sudden bankruptcy where they can't meet the payroll. And we have to do something radically. And I'm wondering what the governor has got in the way of contingency funds or access to contingency funds. So those are, Mr. Chairman, those are some general concerns I will express.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just to begin that discussion, and we'll talk, I'm sure we'll talk more about that when we get to Agency 48, which is the Department of Health. But did talk with my good fellow senator from last evening and went and did do a little bit of inquiry this morning, anticipating those questions would come up. First of all, with respect to the transfers, Mr. Chairman, I can tell you that as we went through the budget page by page, unit by unit, that all the standard budgets that came in at the standard budget. So there was no wholesale transfer of funds within the standard budget from between last biennium and this biennium. And also, if you remember, in the last biennium, we also cut the we all had a 48A and a 48B because we actually split the biennium in half for the Department of Health. And so that they had some things they were trying to do in a specific budget for the first year of the biennium and a specific budget for the second year of the biennium. So there hasn't been any wholesale transfers. Now, with respect to the transfers, we did give the Department of Health authority to transfer money for the 100 series, any money that was unspent in that 100 series over to the Medicaid series to Medicaid to help cover those up. However, typically we won't find deficits, and we don't anticipate seeing deficits in Medicaid until the very probably May or June of the year, and so those have to come through the B11 process. But we don't. If they happen, we won't see those until May or June. That's how it would happen, and that's limited to the 100 series, unspent 100 series money. So, which is salaries and benefits. So that's what I was able to find out for you on transfers. With respect to the contingencies and the cutbacks in Medicaid and Medicare, while I believe that there were some cutbacks a number of years ago, I think in the last budget we didn't have any specific cutbacks, Mr. Chairman. What we did is we asked the Department of Health to try and hold the budget flat, and so they've been working on that. They've been going through, and so I think that they've been trying to hold that steady as far as when we get down to the and we'll see that there's more discussion when we get to Agency 48 with respect to the reorganization of the waiver program. And so ultimately we're going to have, we'll talk about it more when we get there, Mr. Chairman, but what we really have is we have two waivers. We have what's called the comprehensive waiver, which is what we have now. And the comprehensive waiver is comprehensive, Mr. Chairman. And so the average of that is about $64,000 a year for an adult DD waiver. But, you know, some of those folks will use $14,000, and some of those might use $100,000. It just depends, but that's what the average is. When you get to the organization, what they have is everybody who's on a comprehensive waiver is budgeted to remain on a comprehensive wager now. And say you can use the word grandfather, it's not going to be quite right, but they're going to be initially grandfathered. The support waiver is then to come back and to try and pick up a number of people. And in the budget, you'll find when we get there, that the governor's rec was, and which was adopted by the JAC, although it was an incredibly split decision, it was adopted by the JAC that would reduce the waiting list to about approximately 18 months. And so those people will come on and start on. Anybody who's not on a waiver will initially get onto what they call a support waiver. The support waiver is an amount, when you add it all in, it's about $23,000, $24,000 a year, although the actual service, you have to back that out because there's the case management administrative costs, but for a couple thousand dollars. But ultimately, there's going to be a support waiver, so those individuals who have been receiving those services will be able to pick and choose and take the services they want up to the level of the support waiver. Eventually, as that goes over time, they'll get it figured out about where those folks go. There's also they've also got some contingency in the budget, Mr. Chairman, to allow individuals who are incredibly in need of a comprehensive waiver. There's some anticipation and some contingency built into the budget that there will be some people that will move directly into the comprehensive waiver from the support waiver. So we're trying to build that in. I'm sure we can have more discussion about that, but maybe that gets us a little way down the road on some of those discussions.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just two other things, too, to try to further answer. Under the B-11 process, and we get that quarterly, the JACC that quarterly, there was one major B-11 process that did occur in the Department of Health, and that's where they moved from the Department of Family Services their eligibility unit for Medicaid. And that's around 14 employees, and we'll be talking about that later. But that did come through the B-11 process, and you'll see in the budget bill the authorization for that. The other thing we have is Chapter 7, as we develop our standard budgets, and they, as we looked at the 100 series, they netted to zero all of those. So we did not see the kind of concerns that you brought up, and at least that reporting information we had.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Let me, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure that I'm reading through the last year's budget, and we may have to go back to the beginning of the biennium to put this in context, but if we take a step back to where we were looking at overall budget reductions, what most of us were here, with respect to the Department of Health, we actually did not require them to participate in a strict dollar budget reduction, so they were exempted. What we did do, though, is we constructed a two-year budget with the notion that at the end of the day, here's where your standard budget's going to come back and return. And it was a little bit different than just hitting a 4% reduction because they actually asked for increases, and they got an increase. But we bargained for, in essence, restricted them to an increase less than what they were asking for. And then at the same time, we provided them, my recollection is considerable flexibility in managing among the Medicaid accounts during the last biennium in order to say, we're going to look at your total budget when you come back in. And so we did give them a flex that is typically not available to all agencies. And in that, I mean, for example, for a long time we had a restriction on the DD programs because what we saw was happening, we were being lobbied to put more in the developmentally disabled programs. We over-appropriated, the monies were being moved out to another account, creating a deficit, and the same population would come back and advocate for more money. That is a very persuasive group to advocate for, and so we locked those funds up so we may have saw surpluses. In order to hold to the budget for the last biennium, I'm not seeing the specifics in the language, not leaping out. I mean, the last budget, my recollection is, though, we said, give us a two-year budget. What are you going to spend? And we gave them greater flex, and we released them from some of the 100 series language and actually allowed them to move funds around, but not to hire more employees. So there was unique circumstances that occurred during the last biennium when we were looking for cuts that would explain in part the conversations that our colleague from Casper is concerned about, and that is that the department may have been saying we're directed to manage our budgets and we're going to move some things around which might be punitive to one group and beneficial to the other. So as we come out of that last biennium and look forward, and we have a new JAC, when we reach that agency, it would be good to have a discussion about what we did the last biennium, what changes you made to the footnotes, and making sure that those footnotes were not necessarily carried forward to enable that flex that we had given them. Who's ever carrying the 48 budget, talk to the staff to figure out where were we, what have we done to unravel that and push the agency back into a more traditional budgeting. Now, as always, recollections can prove to be testing, but that's a discussion that we do need to have, and that is, fair enough, last biennium was one issue. We were constraining budgets. Where are we this year, and what are we doing with respect to the ability to move and the flex that we provided the department? Does it continue to exist, or doesn't it?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I was not wanting to get into the weeds on the, particularly on the DD budget. We'll talk about that when we get to health department, and I'm inclined to be quite supportive of what JAC has done in that area. My concern is a little more general. I think there's quite a bit of flexibility outside the B11 process where money gets moved around without us knowing about it. I heard some more of the same when they're talking about that business with the recapture of our reversion of funds. Secondly, my concern is in the health area, we're running some financial risks to key institutions that we absolutely have to have. And a good part of the risks are outside our control. What Medicare does, what the reimbursements are, the competition from these new set of hospitals that would refuse to take Medicare and Medicaid. I'm scared we're going to lose some major institutions, partly with something we've done, in good part with something we haven't done, but where we're going to have to suddenly do things because we have a crisis in our local communities. And maybe it's more important for discussion of the governor's budget, or maybe that's not the place, but my general question is what contingencies are available in case that happens, or do we have to have a special session?
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to my tall colleague from Natrona County, sent a very, very good letter to the JAC sharing these concerns with us and about the possibility of if there was some kind of a crisis, where would we get the money? And for whatever reason, my recollection of that letter is the number that you tossed out was around $20 million that you thought that would be the exposure we might have. When we had the discussion with the Department of Health and we talked about that and the way that funds flow through, they thought they had some money there because of all the funds and how it worked through that process. They could help that. The only other thing that we have is the reversions that the governor's utilized for other things in the past. He has a special contingency fund. We'll talk about that in a second, but it is in no way, near, shape, or form close to $20 million. So if we have a $20 million hiccup out of the clear blue, you know, the Department of Health has flexibility to take care of a considerable amount of that, but I can't tell you how much until, because it's sort of an unknown, and we didn't put any $20 million contingency fund in the budget anywhere. Okay, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 1, Agency 1, Office of Governor. Mr. Chairman, what we did here with the JAC recs, the first thing we did, and we'll just go down that list, we reduced $100,000 general fund for transition expenses, leaving $100,000. This is, in fact, there was this was for the governor, a new governor moving in, and so his transition expenses, and we cut it in half, and then we said if there's not a new governor moving in, that he wouldn't get anything. The second one is that we adopted a $350,000. This is what the JAC added. We develop and identify opportunities to improve access to and growth in domestic and international energy markets. We added footnote number 2, and this gets back to my colleague from Glen Rock that we brought the amendment to last year's supplemental budget bill, looking at the need to try to promote the foreign markets for our products and our minerals, ag, and tourism. Number 3, the JAC adopted the governor's recs of $50,000 general fund for the LNG export facilities and added footnote 3. The JAC added $500,000 general fund for potential deep water port litigation expenses. And added footnote number four, this is is a direct result of trying to find some export markets for our coal and the problems we are having on the West Coast trying to be able to see if anyone will allow for that, those ports to be installed. And we had litigation money stuck in there for that. The JAC reduced the governor's rec by $20,000 general fund, leaving $20,000 for appointee moving expenses. There again, this would be for the appointees, for the governor, that he would be in his cabinet. The JAC reduced the governor's letter number 9 for energy initiatives. He had asked for $2 million. We reduced it by $1 million. Then the next one, two, from JAC 7 through JAC 13 are carryover appropriations where we had appropriated money previously. The money had not been spent, and the money and those amounts in those accounts was not reappropriated, but it would carry over to the 15-16 biennium. And those are the different ones deal with the Deepwater Port Initiative. We already had that in the budget. In 13-14, we had LNG in the budget. In 13-14, we had in the budget the tribal liaison. And, Mr. Chairman, what we did here, there had been $400,000 that had been appropriated to hire out of the governor's office two members to represent each individual tribe on the reservation to the tune of $100,000 each per year for the biennium. There's been some discussion about how that money's been spent, accounted for, and the exact direction and desire by the state and the governor to see what kind of benefits we're getting from that. And because of some of the concerns that the JAC had, we agreed to fund it for 1 year. We added a list in the footnote of what we expect to get for that money, and they'll come revisit us, and if things are working out, they'll ask for that the next half of that funding in the second half of the biennium. The other one we did was on the special contingency funds. Now, this has been growing. If you look at the governor's budget, we put in $350,000 a year. This has been growing over the last three or four bienniums. He has not used it. This is money in there for special contingencies. We carry that forward to the next biennium. There's also $750,000 unexpected disaster contingency funds. We did not add any money to that. That's a carryover. One of the last carryover, Mr. Chairman, is the $10,522,000. This was for the data center projects. We allowed that to be carryover. However, we had language that it would be used for larger projects with conditions. We added a footnote number 8 to the state auditor's office. Within the governor's budget, we have the FINERPA account, and that's been a line item appropriation every year of $1 million. Just for accounting measures, the state auditor thought we should put that in a special Fund 35 account. We agreed. One of the things we added that's new, Mr. Chairman, under number 15, is the JAC added $1.2 million general fund for sage-grouse research and protection. Added footnote number 9 to further delineate that. Mr. Chairman, this is a concern that the JAC had and others about this entire issue of sage-grouse. Will they be listed? I think it's in 2015. And to be able to get scientific data to make the case for Wyoming. The last carryover appropriations, Mr. Chairman, is the $500,000 for basic scientific assessment funds. We have the models that the governor is working on, and in fact, we appropriated this last time, and he didn't spend any of that, so we're carrying that over. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked the Vice President if he could explain footnote 6 in a little bit further detail, where the Gov's rec of $2 million was taken down to $1 million. Obviously, these are topics that you've done a lot of work on, I've done a lot of work on, and they seem like a high priority, so I was wondering what the discussion was behind having that number. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bieber.
Mr. Chairman, if you read the governor's letter, I don't have that with me. I can provide a copy of it. Some of the items that he requested were already moving along and have already appropriated money, making great progress. One of them is the CO2 issue and the pipelines, and that was part of his language. We just felt that given all the other energy initiatives we have and the money we're spending, that because of what we have appropriated in the past, the progress we made, we didn't need the full $2 million, and that's why we cut it in half.
Other discussion? Senator Van Flateren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to confirm on the $500,000 for $500,000 for litigation for deep water ports. That's all that money can be used for, is for the litigation aspect of that.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Bebout.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the good chairman of the Appropriations Committee, in footnote 11 and 13, it's just a couple examples of, we talk about some carryover appropriations, but when you go up to the line items, of course, they're not in there. And this is, I guess, a curiosity question. Where do we count for these dollars in the budget? Or I guess maybe the question is, or do we not account for them? And if not, is this some of those dollars that kind of disappear over time and we're trying to figure out where they're all at now?
Chairman Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, these numbers here have been appropriated in previous budgets. And the way the language there is worded, if they're not spent, they would revert. So that's why we have the language that we carry them over. And if, in fact, we did not have this language in there, then these unexpended, unobligated funds would all revert. And so specifically, we're asking the previous budget appropriations we made in other budgets, the money was not spent, but we see the need there, so we're carrying it over to the next biennium.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, if could.
Senator Cooper.
In other words, we're not required then to, even though the time's kind of run out on, we're not required to reappropriate that money. We're just carrying it over kind of as an automatic thing. Is that the way that works?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The money's been appropriated in previous budgets, and when I talked about the special contingency fund, it's actually been three or four budgets. And every year we come back and we carry it over. If we did not, it would revert.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Chairman, just want to make sure I was reading this right. I see in the natural resource policy footnote 9, there's $1.2 million, I believe it is, for possible endangered species, and then there's $1.3 million for endangered species on line 17. So this budget for the governor has $2.5 million dealing with the Federal Endangered Species Act, I believe. Is that correct?
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, what you're looking at is we do have the Endangered Species Administrative Budget of $1.358 million. That's a standard budget, and that's in there, and that's what you see reflected on that page about almost halfway down. The FNRFA account is there specific language in our statutes how that's utilized. A lot of it's utilized for helping counties and or soil conservation districts to go to these cooperating agency meetings with the BLM and the Forest Service when you deal with NEPA. And some of the issues relative to an EIS or those types, or an RMP, those type of procedures. We've added $1.2 million to that specifically for sage grouse.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as I read this, you've got the special contingency fund where there's a $315,000 appropriation this year and a $1.38 million carryover, so the total balance in that fund is going to be just under $1.7 million. Is that a correct reading, and what contingencies can that be used for? Can we use that if we have a prospective bankruptcy of a major health institution we can't deal without?
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. The $1.38 million is previously appropriate and authorized funds that have not been spent, and they're carried forward with that footnote. We do add to that one the $315,000 additional, which is a standard budget item that we've carried, and that would be available. I can't tell you the exact language in the statute, but I think it's up to the governor pretty much to deal with it how he wants to in terms of spending it.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, my question's in the area of the tribal liaison. Maybe if there are other follow-up questions on this issue, they'd like to take that first.
That's all right.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the tall senator's question about whether it can be used for bankruptcy, you know, it can be used as provided by law. If you have nothing in the statutes that says you can take money out of any budget and give it to an individual company to offset their bankruptcy or debtor in possession financing, then No, it can't, but if we're behind on the payments to that institution, then certainly the state can make up those in arrears payments, but to just write a check in a bankruptcy situation, I don't believe that that money could be used for that.
Mr. Vice President. Oh. Senator Case.
Chairman, Chairman, I serve as chairman of the Select Committee on Tribal Relations for the Senate side, and I've been involved with the development of the tribal relations position since we did that numerous years ago. And that's kind of been an interesting exercise, but it's been a very useful one. And it has been fruitful, but it has not always been easy or trouble-free, let me say that. But actually, kind of the second round way that the tribal liaison position evolved, Mr. Chairman, was that it was actually a position in the governor's office. There were two people that were tribal liaisons. They were actually governor's employees. And it was when they were in Cheyenne, we provided the office space and support for them and paid half their salary. And then when they were in on the Wind River Indian Reservation, the tribe picked up that side, provided them with a place and salary. Our previous governor, got tired of that arrangement because he felt that it just wasn't working as well as he wanted. That the liaisons didn't act very much like employees of his office, and he became frustrated with that. So we went to this new system where we said, let's just give them money and let them appoint the liaisons, and we don't have to fool with it down here. I tried to fight doing that because I really believe that was a mistake. It sort of cut into the sharing that we need for the liaison position. And I come down to this where this new system isn't working very well either. And the liaisons don't see government exactly like we see government or like the governor sees government or the Appropriations Committee. So what we do is we cut their budget in half. And, you know, that might be appropriate, but I ask you to look at this. It's $200,000, and it's in the area of a much bigger times that are happening between the state of Wyoming and the tribes. You know, we're addressing some fairly significant, serious issues. At the same time, I'm up hanging on trying to be a peacemaker and trying to say, let's not get too carried away. Let's not overreact. We're going to work all this out. You know, there's litigation, but we still have to interface state government to tribal government every day on a myriad of other things. And so when it comes down to it, I think the justification for cutting the liaison money by half had better be pretty good, because we potentially poke a stick in people's eye by a great amount that's not worth doing at this time. And I'd like to really hear the justification for this.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And good points for me by my colleague from Fremont County, and this has been an area that, as he talked about, has been all over the place the last 8 or 10 years, and from being in the governor's office and having oversight to what they do now. And I think the concern when we started talking about this, and first of all, this has in no way, shape, or form relates to any kind of an issue going on with boundaries in Fremont County. That has nothing to do with this. This is conversations that began before we received that letter from the EPA. And so they're not related at all. And what we talked about is what exactly do these people do? And not only that, but we have certain things we demand of everybody else in government. If we're going to appropriate money and provide it to people, then there's nothing wrong with us expecting them to have a budget, and nothing wrong with us expecting them to account for how the money's spent and to show what they're going to be doing for that money they receive, the deliverables. And if you look at the footnote, that's what we say. And what I envision happening with this is I think this is something that can be corrected. I think they need to understand that the way it's been done in the past is just not acceptable for either side. I will tell you that I've spoken to one of them. They completely get it. And I think if we do this, it's not intended to eliminate this in any way, shape, or form. It's to get back like we demand of anyone else where we appropriate money. Here's a budget. Here's what we'd like you to do. You report like we want you to do. And tell us what process or what you're going to do to deliver to us for that money. I think it can be worked out. If they don't want to do that, they don't want to have a budget, they don't want to show what their deliverables are, then I would question why we want to continue to fund it.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, one of the questions I have about this, with this new system, is, and it's kind of a disconnect to me, and I was wondering if somebody else can explain it to me. We're talking about people who are citizens of Wyoming, but they're also citizens of their own sovereign nation, and it's their liaison to me. As I understand the explanation, we give them money, they choose the liaison to the state. And I don't understand that. If we're going to be paying for a representative, shouldn't it be the state's liaison to the tribes and the representative from the state of Wyoming to the tribes? If they're going to have a liaison to us and they're picking that, I don't understand why they wouldn't be paying the freight themselves.
Would you like a ruling? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've got a question with respect to four different footnotes, and I think I can stack them up here because they all go along together. They deal with footnotes 2, 3, 4, and 6. And the topic here is in this area where we're trying to set policy for economic development and diversification, in some instances diversifying our exports, providing new exports, other areas where we're looking for other opportunities for Wyoming minerals because we understand that there is a large effort to, for example, constrain coal and its availability as a U.S. Commodity, a worldwide commodity. And then finally, I think there are several projects out there, folks. There's an issue of what you're going to hear discussion, the bolt-on technology for CO2 technology and XPRIZE. We're talking about an energy campus. Maybe there's one up in the nation to the north that have, or one of the provinces to the north of us that have successfully embarked on these projects. We have the potential to bring in manufacturing to better utilize our soda ash market, maybe for manufacturing for things like screens for your computer. We've got the gas to liquids project here, but there's also in GTL there's compressed natural gas too, and there's a distinction. So we've got a bunch of things that seem to be attracting our interest. In general, Mr. Chairman, what I'd ask as we go through each of these footnotes is talk a little bit about how it is that we're delegating and what is it we're delegating to the governor's office. Are we simply saying here's a bunch of money for each category and go about the task of sending your policy people out to do work, or should we begin to re-look at this as to say, you know, in other areas we've used the word deliverables. And, you know, I've been a party to making these amendments before where we put in monies into policymaking, executive branch decisions, but we don't, at the end of the year, you walk back and say, what do we get for it? And it seems to me that maybe we ought to take a closer look at these amendments and really focus on saying, well, here's what we're looking for. We want the executive department branch, the governor's office, to put together a task force. Tell us what's deliverable, what you think you can achieve, and suppose you do that by August 1. By August 1, go back to your oversight subcommittee. In many instances, it would be minerals. And the minerals provide a timeline, what you think we should be doing, what we can be doing, and then whether we need legislation approved, and let's get the legislation under effort for the next following session. And partly, I'm getting to the point in my life where I frankly am getting impatient, the idea that we simply cast money out without deliverables, without developing a plan. We come back a year later and We know that there are people gallivanting around, they're doing things, but we don't see anything develop about it in terms of an action plan. So, just going through them, I see with footnote number 2, we've got $350,000 to develop international plant markets. Again, I don't see the action plan. Where is the action plan? Should we create it? And who should be overseeing it? Are we going to need legislation, and how do we get there? I see in this instance that we've prohibited legislative travel. Frankly, I think in some instances we've met there are some U.S.-driven plans where legislators ought to be traveling, but I don't think we ought to be traveling under the governor's budget. If there are going to be instances where we think it's prudent to have legislators becoming knowledgeable as to whether or not there's more we can do in the foreign markets, perhaps we should put a budget in our feed bill so that legislators are going to the management council for authorization of travel and not going down and groveling, if you will, to the governor for travel overseas. Footnote number 3 is sort of, again, an amorphous $50,000 to develop LNG export facilities. Again, what's the deliverables? What do we want? How do we get deliverables? And do we need legislation? How do we get to the legislative arena? Footnote number 4 has $500,000 for deep water ports litigation. I assume the proposition is that there's no purpose in people traveling and meeting any longer, that we're just going to leap into litigation. I love lawyers, but I assume we're going to be paying lawyers out of state to be doing this. Are we going to be commencing action? Again, are we directing actions being filed, or are we just simply telling the governor's office, you got money for litigation, you figure it out? What is the deliverable? What's the direction? Can we do a better job of directing what it is we're looking for? Footnote number 6, $1 million of Wyoming's energy strategy initiatives to include baseline water testing, CO2 corridors. Again, is this a planning effort? What are the deliverables? Do we need to get involved? Are we actually going to be paying for the development of testing CO2 corridors? Are we planning it? Is this something that's essentially going to the pipeline authority? What is the plan? So, Mr. Chairman, what I'm really looking for is an effort to talk about these a little bit more. And if we're going to spend this money, maybe we should be talking about a collaboration where the executive department prepares a plan, a budget, a timeline, brings back to us, we approve it, maybe not approve it, but at least oversee it. We get the oversight committees to look at it, and then let's measure ourselves against the deliverables so we can actually see ourselves moving down and accomplishing some of these efforts.
Senator Schiffer.
And I would continue that. If you look on down the list, footnotes 7, 8, and 9, it's the same thing, the interrupted reversions. For programs which are really have no definition, no goal, no measurable achievements built into them. And I would suggest that they'd fall under the same category as what the majority floor leader was talking about.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, when we looked at this, I will share with the members of the Senate, and I don't know how to explain. I think it's just kind of what I would call the flavor of the month. And as we've done these budgets over time, it was like the LNG. You know, there was a real move by this country to have LNG and export our gas. And so it was something that we put in a previous budget. We stuck the money in there, policy and analysts, and I can tell you that very little of that money was spent. You know, I would, on the $350,000 for the international markets and trade, that came up last year. There's some specific language in that footnote. But you can make that argument about all of these. And I think the majority floor leader and my colleague from Johnson County make a good point. If we're going to do these different things, we ought to have some directions, some ideas, some end results, and some demands put on the governor to come back with these measurable results. And so I think that's a great idea, and I would be glad to work with them to put together, and we've talked about this, the floor leader and I have, to put together a way to oversee this and be involved so we we can say, okay, here's $45,000 for LNG. What are you going to try to get out of it, and what can we expect from it? And if we don't get anything, we don't expect it, then it should be over, and the money should come back. And that would be the case for all of these. Now, the one on the litigation for the deep ports, there again, flavor of the month. Now, this was brought to us. We all understand what's going on the West Coast. This was represented to us as a way to possibly have a better chance of exporting our coal. So good ideas, and I think we ought to work on putting something together in that regard. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, I would add is that there's one new employee in the governor's office that I want to be sure the body's made aware of, and that's in Homeland Security. It's actually a transfer from the ETS. It was a footnote in a 2013 budget that we put in there to do that, and he, in fact, did that. I'd be glad to answer any questions. If not, I would call for the question.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question on another topic. We haven't had any discussion on information technology, and the governor's been leading a lot of efforts on that. I know we still have some funds that are uncommitted from previous appropriations. If the good chairman of appropriations could give us a rundown on where we're at with that, and if there was discussion on the appropriations committee with regard to necessity for more, or if we're good now.
Mr. Vice President.
And Mr. Chairman, and part of that relates to the letters from the governor, and you asked this question earlier, my colleague from Albany County, about the $2 million energy policy. And that came from the energy policy strategy that he developed, and specifically he wanted $2 million effective immediately, which we took out, to continue to build on the success of Wyoming energy strategy initiatives, included but not limited to baseline water testing, CO2 corridors, energy atlas, liquid natural gas infrastructure, hybrid solutions, and strategies that arise as we progress. The feeling of the JAC was a lot of these are already in place. We didn't think we needed that amount of money. And gets back to the comments of the floor leader and talked about as to what are we looking at in terms of outcome. If you're asking about the data center specifically, what we did is, you may recall, I believe that was a $15 million appropriation set up two or three years ago. The floor leader was chairman of the JAC. Part of that money went to a large internet company that has now moved into Cheyenne, as I understand it. This other money is that's left there. We wanted to leave it there for data centers because there was testimony to us that there are possibly a couple other ideas out there that are sort of gelling and may come into the state. But we wanted to expand it to include large projects. So it gave more flexibility to the governor.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, along those same lines, was there any discussion about taking the $10 million and using it to recruit something like a medical company based in Philadelphia to move into Park County or broaden that out, kind of the flavor of the month?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if there's a question there.
Is there any further discussion?
Question. The call for the question.
The question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Mr. Vice President Bebout's motion to adopt Section 1, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 1 has been adopted. The next session. Senator Coe.
Before the majority floor leader makes his motion, if he can remember what he's supposed to say, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
Senator Coe, you may.
If I could briefly, I'd like to introduce the new president at Northwest College, who's up here in the balcony, or she was. She's gone now. Maybe I'll come back and introduce her when she comes back.
Good decision, Senator Coe. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was having so much fun going through the budget, I didn't realize we passed lunchtime, so... Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, you have a motion to make?
Well, I thought we were going to have some notices or something. There's nothing for you to read in up there at all?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
Yeah.
Well, then I move that we adjourn until, or we
stand
in recess till 2 p.m.
Okay. Another announcement. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m., 7:30. We're going to hear Senate File 24, Special Elections Revisions, Senate File 25, Election Code Revisions, Senate File 107, Certificates of Insurance, and Senate File 22, Insurance Policies. Those last two things deal with those certificates of insurance. We're going to hear those together and work them together. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Summary Probate Proceedings, will be meeting at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning up in S-14, where we will take up the continuation of Senate File 47, Katie's Law. Then we'll take up Senate File 69, Simulcasting Permits, Senate File 94, Game and Fish Resident Preference Points, and Senate File 35, Wearable Computers Prohibition While Driving.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, more of a reminder, your Mineral Committee number 9 will meet in approximately 15 minutes, and we'll meet down in Hirschler Basement, B-63.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet today, Monday, February 17th, 15 minutes after adjournment in room S-11 to discuss the following Senate files: Senate File 100, Business Ready Community Program Modifications, and Senate File 30, a re-referral compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA evidence. And Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules, will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, the 18th, at noon recess in room S-5 to discuss the following Senate files: Senate File 106, State Education Administration, and Senate File 11, Appropriation for the Legislature.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet about 10 minutes after adjournment today to consider Senate File 86, Obstructing Roads and Highways, Senate File 101, License Plate Vehicle Indicator. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, February 18th, in room S-16 to take up Senate File 87, Public Records Preservation, and continue our discussion on Senate File 93, Agricultural Gas Tax Refund.
Any further announcements?
30 minutes after noon recess tomorrow.
All right. Okay, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m.